liberating realization that he was no more attracted to guys than to cats, just happily kicking the tops off mushrooms in a spirit of tremendous relief. A sort of music started up, consisting of a series of loud, thick bumps, punctuated by a smattering of feminine groans and something that sounded like a squeaky door, and Larry Donfrey headed down the runway to sudden cheers and whoops. What the heck, thought Rusin, whoops? Cheers? Would he get cheers? Whoops? He doubted it. Who whooped cheered for the round bald guy in the gondolier costume? If he were a woman, he'd cheer whoop for Donfrey, the guy with the tight ass and ripped brown arms. The blonde cued Rustin by pointing at him while walking in place. Oh God, oh God. Rustin stepped warily out from behind the paper screen. No one whooped. He started down the runway. No cheering. The room made the sound a room makes when attempting not to laugh. He tried to smile sexily, but his mouth was too dry. Probably his yellow teeth were showing in the place where his gums dipped down. Frozen in the harsh spotlight, he looked so crazy and old and forlorn and yet residually arrogant that an intense discomfort settled on the room. A discomfort that, in a non-charity situation, might have led to shouted insults or thrown objects, but in this case drew a kind of pity whoop from near the salad bar. Rustin brightened and sent a relieved half-wave in the direction of the whoop, and the awkwardness of this gesture, the way it inadvertently revealed how terrified he was, endeared him to the crowd that seconds before had been ready to mock him, and someone else pity whooped, and Rustin smiled a big loopy grin which caused a wave of mercy cheers. Rustin was deaf to the charity in this. What a super level of whoops and cheers! He should do a flex. He would. He did. This caused an increase in the level of whoops and cheers, which to his ear were now at least equal in volume to Donfrey's whoops cheers. Plus Donfrey had been basically naked, which meant that technically he'd beaten Donfrey, since Donfrey had needed to get naked just to manage a tie with him, Al Rustin. Ha ha, poor Donfrey, running around in his skivvies to no avail. The blonde threw a butterfly net over Rustin's head and he joined Donfrey in the cardboard jail. Now that he had thrashed Donfrey, he felt a surge of affection for him. Good old Donfrey. He and Donfrey were the twin pillars of the local business community. He didn't know Donfrey well, just admired him from afar. Just like Donfrey admired him from afar. Once the whole Donfrey clan had filed into Rustin's shop, bygone days. Donfrey's wife had been beautiful, nice legs, slim back, long hair. You looked at her and couldn't look away. Donfrey's kids had also seemed great, two elf-like androgynes politely debating something, possibly the history of the Supreme Court. Each celeb had his own barred window in the cardboard jail. Donfrey now stepped away from his and toward Rustin's. How gracious, what a prince. They'd have a little chat. The crowd would jealously wonder what the twin pillars were chatting about in private. But sorry, no, this was between pillars. Rabble need not apply. Donfrey was saying something, but the music was blaring and Rustin was partly deaf. Rustin leaned in. I said, don't worry about it, Ed, Donfrey was shouting. You did fine, really, no biggie. Give it a week, nobody will even remember it. What the hell? What was Donfrey saying? Had he done badly? Had embarrassed himself? In front of the whole town? No way, he'd kicked butt. Was Donfrey on some other planet? On drugs? On drugs in an anti-drug event? Had Donfrey just called him Ed? Donfrey could kiss his ass, that fake, that snob. He'd forgotten that. He'd forgotten that Donfrey was a snobby fake. That time the Donfreys came into bygone days, they'd immediately turned and walked out, as if they'd found Rustin's vintage collectibles too dusty and ill-selected for the Donfrey house, a literal mansion on a hill. And Donfrey's wife wasn't beautiful, Rustin suddenly honestly admitted. She was pale. Pale, haughty waif. As far as Donfrey's kids, if those kids belonged to him, he'd scruff them up a bit, try and de-elfify them. Were they boys or girls? He honestly couldn't tell. He didn't have kids himself. Had never married. He had the boys, however. The boys were his nephews. The boys were not elfin. Au contraire. The boys were whatever was the opposite of elfin. Trollish? Clodhoppers? No, the boys were great. The boys were all boy. And how? Possibly too much so. Why his sister Meg insisted on taking them to budget cuts when budget cuts made them look like three hulking versions of the same odd Germanic roundhead, their bangs cut straight across, he did not know. Every night was a three-way grunting wrestling fest in the basement, the boys calling one another Scuzznuckles or Fardin Jestron, until one of them bonked his round head into something metal and they all helped the hurt one upstairs, tears running down their wrestling engorged cheeks like three suddenly repentant Nazis. Not Nazis. Jeez. Germans. Energetic pre-war Germanic lads. Healthy young Beethovens. Although as far as Beethoven, he doubted Beethoven had ever pried a prayer book rack off the pew with his bare hands on a dare from another Beethoven, while a third Beethoven proudly displayed on a hymnal four tightly rolled snot towers. It was the divorce. The divorce had made the boys wild. It was sad about Mag. In high school, Al had been the popular wrestler, and Mag had been the stout girl in Christ's life with a big crush on Christ. They lived on their parents' farm, but somehow only Mag had turned out farmish. Junior year, she'd started dating Ken Glenn, equally agrarian, with plate-sized ears. There'd been jokes at the time about Mag and Ken being married in overalls. There'd been jokes about Mag and Ken being married in a church full of barnyard animals. If there was ever a marriage you'd expect to last, this one was it. Two homely Christian farmers. But no, Ken had left Mag for another farmer's. Mag was not homely. She was simple. She had a kind of simple, earthy. She was handsome. A handsome woman. She. Everything was where it should be. She carried herself well. Except when bellowing at the boys. Then her face became a red contorted mask. You saw her frustration at being the only divorced woman in her extremely strict church. Her embarrassment at having had to move in with her brother. Her worry that if he lost the shop, as it now appeared almost certain he would, she'd have to quit school and get a third job. Last night, he'd found her at the kitchen table after her shift at Costco, fast asleep across her community college nursing text. A nurse at 45. That was a laugh. He found that laughable. Although, he didn't find it laughable. He found it admirable. A snob like Donfrey might find it laughable. A snob like Donfrey would take one look at Mag and her baggy nurse's outfit and hustle his spoiled elves back to the stupendous Donfrey mansion, which had recently been featured in the lifestyle section of the... Oh, mansion schmansion. Did Gandhi's house have the largest outdoor trampoline in the Tri-City area? Did Jesus have a 2-acre remote-controlled car track with mountains to scale and a little village that lit up at night? Not in his Bible. Huh. The cardboard jail was now filled with celebs. How had that happened? He'd apparently missed the runway walks of Max's Auto, Ed Burden of Steak and Roll, and the freakishly tall twin hippie brothers who ran Coffee Minded. The blonde was standing silently now, head down, as if waiting for her experience-based profundity to overflow into the show-stopping heartfelt speech that would establish her once and for all as the most pain-wracked person in the place. "Folks, we've arrived at our most important aspect," she said softly, "which is our auction, which is to be silent. Without you folks, you know what? Laugh Kids Off Crack is just some guys with strong anti-drug feelings wearing weird clothes in their own homes. Write down your bid. Someone will come around. Later, if you are the one who won, you'll be taken to lunch by your celebrity who you bid for." Was it over? It appeared to be over. Could he sneak out? He could if he bent low. He bent low and booked it as the blonde droned on. In a changing area, he found Donfrey's clothes slopped over a chair. Expensive pleated pants, nice silk shirt. On the floor were Donfrey's keys and wallet. Just like Donfrey to junk up a perfectly nice changing area. Oh, why be mad at Donfrey? Donfrey hadn't done anything to him. He just made a comment, trying to be nice. Trying to be charitable. To someone beneath him. Rustin took a step forward and gave the wallet a kick. Wow, did it ever slide. Right under a stack of risers. Like a hockey puck. There were the keys alone now, underscoring the absence of the wallet. Yikes. He could say he'd accidentally kicked the wallet under there, which was sort of true. He hadn't thought about it, really. He just felt like kicking it, and then he had. He was impulsive like that. That was one of the good things about him. It was how he'd bought the shop. The failing shop. He gave the keys a kick. What the hell? Why had he done that? They slid even better than the wallet. Now wallet and keys were far under the risers. Gosh, too bad. Too bad he'd accidentally kicked those things under there. Donfrey burst into the changing area, talking loudly on his cell in a know-it-all voice. "She was fine," Donfrey was bellowing. "Nervous but psyched, being brave, stiff upper lip. Kid was solid gold. Always did her share, carried the laundry down on her day, dragged the trash to the street. Hadn't slept all week, too excited. What was she looking forward to most? Running with her class in gym. Imagine, all your life, you're limping around with a bent-in foot, then they finally figure out a way to fix it. It was scary, yes, Jesus, the brace literally broke and reformed the foot. Poor thing had been waiting so long. They had to haul ass pronto, pick her up, shoot over to the place. They were running late, the auction thing had gone on and on. He probably should have skipped it, but it was such a terrific cause. Rustin finished dressing quickly and left the changing area. Geez, what was all that about? Apparently one of the elves wasn't as perfect as she... Had one of the elves had a limp? He couldn't remember. Well, that was sad. The sickness of a kid was... Children were the future. He'd do anything to help that kid. If one of the boys had a bent foot, he'd move heaven and earth to get it fixed. He'd rob a bank. And if the boy was a girl, even worse. Who'd ask a clubfoot or bent foot or whatever to dance? There your daughter sat with her crutch, all dressed up, not dancing. Hundreds of dry leaf fragments were skittering across the Flapjackers parking lot. A bird on a parking bumper bolted, alarmed at the advance of the leaves. Stupid leaves, they'd never catch that bird. Unless he killed it with a stone, left it lying there. They'd be so grateful they'd declare him king of leaves. Ha ha. He gave a pile of leaves a vicious kick. Shit, he felt like crying. Why, what was it? What was making him so sad? Off he drove through the town where he'd lived his whole life. The river was high. The grade school had a new bike rack. A ton of dogs leaped to the fence as usual as he passed the Flannery Kennel. Next to the kennel was Mike's Gyros. Once during that terrible seventh grade year, Mom had taken him to Mike's for a Coke. "What seems to be the problem, Al?" Mom had said. "Everyone's calling me bossy and fat," he'd said. "Plus they say I'm sneaky." "Well, Al," she'd said, "you are bossy, you are fat, and I'm guessing you can be pretty sneaky. But you know what else you are? You have what is called moral courage. When you know something is right, you do it, no matter what the cost." Mom could sometimes be full of it. Once, she'd said, she could tell by the way he ran upstairs that he'd make a great mountain climber. Once, when he managed a B- in math, she'd said he should be an astronomer. Good old Mom. She'd always made him feel special. Suddenly his face was hot. He felt Mom looking at him from heaven, sternly but wryly, in that way she'd had, as if saying, "Hello, are we maybe forgetting something?" Well, it had been an accident. He had just accidentally misplaced some things inadvertently with his foot, via spontaneously kicking them erroneously. Mom's eyes narrowed in heaven. "They were being mean to me," he said. Mom in heaven tapped her foot. What was he supposed to do? Go racing back? Lead them to the keys? They'd know he'd done it. Plus, Donfrey was probably long gone. Probably Donfrey's wife had a set of spare keys. Although Donfrey's wife hadn't been there. Well, someone could drive Donfrey home, after he'd fruitlessly looked for his keys a while. Causing him to be so late, they'd have to reschedule the kids. Shit. Oh, they'd live. No one was dying from this. So a kid had to wait a few more months for her. Rustin pulled into a white stone driveway. He had to think. A Yorkie rushed up to the fence, barking ceremonially. Then a chicken came up. Huh. A chicken and a Yorkie living in the same yard. They stood side by side, looking at Rustin. Eureka. He saw how he could do it. He'd sneak back, pretend he'd never left. Everyone would be searching for the wallet and keys. He'd look alongside them a while. When they were about to give up, he'd say, "I assume you've already looked under those risers?" "Well, no," Donfrey would say. "Might be worth a try," Rustin would suggest. They'd get some guys and move the risers, and there would be the wallet and there would be the keys. "Wow," Donfrey would say, "you are amazing." "It's just a hunch," Rustin would say. "I simply mentally eliminated all other possible options." "I'm afraid I've underestimated you," Donfrey would say. "We have to have you over to the house soon." "To the mansion?" Rustin would say. "And Al," Donfrey would say, "sorry about that time we walked out of your shop. That was rude. And Al, sorry I called you Ed earlier." "Oh, did you?" Rustin would say. "I didn't even really notice." Dinner at the mansion would go well. soon he'd basically be part of the family. He'd just drop by whenever. That would be nice. Nice to hang out in a mansion. Sometimes the boys might come along. Although, the boys had better not break anything. They'd have to wrestle outside. One thing he did not need was his friend's mansion trashed. He saw Donfrey's gorgeous wife, distressed by all the things the boys had broken, collapse into a chair and start weeping. "Thanks, boys. Great. Thanks a lot for that. Go outside. Go outside and sit quietly." Now the moon is full in the big window, and he and Donfrey are wearing tuxes, and Donfrey's wife is wearing something low-cut and golden. "This dinner is great," he says. "All your dinners have been so great." "It's the least we could do," says Donfrey. "You helped us out so much that time I stupidly lost my keys." "Ah, yeah, well, about that," Rustin says. Then he tells them all about it, how he did an unfortunate thing, saw the light, raced back to help. "What a riot," says Donfrey. "That took guts," says Donfrey's wife, "coming back like that." "I'd say it took moral courage," says Donfrey. "Your honesty actually makes us admire you all the more," says Donfrey's wife. Mag was there too. What was she doing there? Well, it was fine. She could stay. Mag was a good egg. Decent conversationalist. The Donfreys would appreciate her good qualities, just like they appreciated his good qualities. And wouldn't Mom love seeing that, her kids finally getting their due from some sophisticated people in a beautiful mansion? An odd, inadvertent sound of contentment jerked Rustin out of his reverie. Ha, what the hell? Where was he? The Yorkie was sniffing the chicken. The chicken didn't seem to mind or notice. The chicken had a laser-like focus on him, Al Rustin. Yeah, right, like any of that was happening. Like he was racing back. They'd see through him. They'd fry his ass. People were always seeing through him and frying his ass. When he'd stolen Kirk Dessner's flip-downs, the kids on the team had seen through him and fried his ass. The time he cheated on Syl, Syl had seen through him, broken off their engagement, and cheated on him with Charles, which had fried his ass possibly worse than any single other ass frying he'd ever had, in a life that it recently seemed was simply a series of escalating ass fries. He turned his mind toward Mom, as always, for a word of encouragement. "What, that Donfrey doofus never made a mistake in his life?" Mom said. "Was never inadvertently involved in something unfortunate that sadly occurred, and now wants to label you a dick or scum or a bad immature person because of one small mistake? Does that seem fair? Don't you think he's probably needed forgiveness sometime in his life?" "Probably," Rustin said. "Oh, definitely," Mom said. "I've known you all your life, Al, and there's not a mean bone in your body. You are Al Rustin. Don't forget that. Sometimes you think something's wrong with you, but every time turns out there isn't. Why beat yourself up about this and in so doing miss the beauty of the actual moment?" The lilt of Mom's voice in his head cheered him. He pulled out of the driveway. Mom was right. The world was beautiful. Here was the pioneer graveyard with its leaning yellowed stones. Here was the very vivid Jiffy Lube. A dense ball of birds went linear, then settled into the branches of a lightning-blasted tree. He knew it wasn't really Mom in his head. He was just imagining what Mom would have said. Well, who knew what Mom would have said? She could be a crazy old broad there at the end. But he sure did miss her. He thought again of the crippled girl. They'd missed the appointment and had to reschedule. The only available slot was months away. In the dark of night, she reached down for her bent foot and let out a groan. She'd been so close to getting... That was crap. That was negative. It had to let the healing begin. Everyone knew that. You had to love yourself. What was positive? The shop. Thinking up ways to improve it. Make it halfway decent. Bring it back to life. He'd put in a coffee bar. Tear out that old stained rug. There, he was feeling better already. Yet you had to have joy. Joy kept a guy going. Once he got the shop viable, he'd go beyond that. Make it great. Lines of people would be waiting when he arrived every morning. As he pushed his way through the crowd in his mind, everyone seemed to be asking with smiles and pats on his back, would he consider running for mayor? Would he do for the town what he'd done for bygone days? Ha ha, what a fun deal that would be, running for mayor. What color would his banners be? What was his slogan? Al Rustin, friend to all. That was good. Al Rustin, the best among us. Little vain. Al Rustin, like you, only better. Ha ha. Here was the shop. Nobody was waiting to get in. A muddy tarp had blown over from the junkyard and plastered itself against the window. Across from the junkyard was the viaduct where the hobos hung out. Those hobos were ruining his... He believed they preferred to be called homeless. Hadn't he read that? Hobo being derogatory? Jesus, that took nerve. Guy never works a day in his life, just goes around stealing pies off windowsills, then starts yelping about his rights. He'd like to walk up to a homeless and call him a hobo. He'd do it too, he would. He'd grab that damn hobo by the collar and go, "Hey, hobo, you're ruining my business. I've missed my rent 2 months in a row. Go back to the foreign country you probably..." He just really hated those beggars walking past his shop with their crude signs. Couldn't they at least spell right? Yesterday, one had walked by with a sign that said, "Please help homeless." He felt like shouting, "Hey, sorry you lost your hom." They spent enough time under that viaduct. Couldn't they at least proofread each other's... As he parked the car, his mind went strangely blank. Where was he? His shop. Ugh. Where were his keys? On the same old ugly lanyard, impossible to get out of your pocket. Jesus, he couldn't stand the thought of going in. He'd sit there alone all afternoon. Why did he have to do it? For what? For who? Mac. Mac and the boys were counting on him. He sat a minute, breathing deeply. An old man in filthy clothes staggered up the street, dragging a cardboard square on which, no doubt, he slept. His teeth were ghoulish, his eyes wet and red. Rustin imagined himself leaping from the car, knocking the man to the ground, kicking him and kicking him, teaching him, in this way, a valuable lesson on how to behave. The man gave Rustin a weak smile, and Rustin gave the man a weak smile back. The Semplica Girl Diaries. September 3rd. Having just turned 40, have resolved to embark on grand project of writing every day in this new black book just got at Office Max. Exciting to think how in 1 year, at rate of one page per day, we'll have written 365 pages. And what a picture of life and times then available for kids and grandkids, even great-grandkids, whoever, all are welcome, to see how life really was, is, now. Because what do we know of other times, really? How close-smelled and carriages sounded? Will future people know, for example, about sound of airplanes going over at night, since airplanes by that time passé? Will future people know sometimes cats fought at night? Because by that time some chemical invented to make cats not fight? Last night, dreamed of two demons having sex and found it was only two cats fighting outside window. Will future people be aware of concept of demons? Will they find our belief in demons quaint? Will windows even exist? Interesting to future generations that even sophisticated college grad like me sometimes woke in cold sweat, thinking of demons, believing one possibly under bed? Anyway, what the heck, I'm not planning on writing encyclopedia. If any future person is reading this, if you want to know what a demon was, go look it up in something called an encyclopedia, if you even still have those. I'm getting off track due to those fighting cats. We'll write 20 minutes a night, no matter how tired. So, good night to all future generations. Please know, I was a person like you. I, too, breathed air and tensed legs while trying to sleep, and when writing with pencil, sometimes brought pencil to nose to smell. Although, who knows, maybe you future people write with laser pens? But probably even those have a certain smell? Do future people still sniff their laser pens? Well, it is getting late, and I am going far afield in these philosophical speculations. But hereby resolve to write in this book at least 20 minutes a night. If discouraged, just think of how much will have been recorded for posterity after one mere year. September 5th. Oops. Missed a day. Things hectic. We'll summarize yesterday. Yesterday, a bit rough. While picking kids up at school, bumper fell off Park Avenue. Note to future generations. Park Avenue equals type of car. Ours not new. Ours oldish. Bit rusty. Eva got in, asked what was meaning of Junkorama. At that moment, bumper fell off. Mr. Wren, history teacher, quite helpful, retrieved bumper, note, write letter of commendation to principal, saying he too once had car whose bumper fell off, when poor, in college. Eva assured me it was all right bumper had fallen off. I replied, of course it was all right. Why wouldn't it be all right? It was just something that had happened. I certainly hadn't caused. Image that stays in mind is of three sweet kids in back seat, sad, chastened expressions on little faces, timidly holding bumper across laps. One end of bumper had to hang out Eva's window, and today she has sniffles, plus small cut on hand from place where bumper was sharp. Mr. Wren attached hanky to end of bumper hanging out window. When Eva worried aloud about us forgetting to return hanky, "Well, Daddy, we are the careless kind," I said I hardly saw us as careless kind. Then, of course, on way home, hanky blew off. Lily, as always, put all in perspective by saying, "Who cares about stupid bumper? We're going to get a new car soon anyway when rich, right?" Upon arriving home, put bumper in garage. In garage, found dead large mouse or small squirrel crawling with maggots. Use shovel to transfer majority of squirrel mouse to hefty bag. Smudge or stain of squirrel mouse remains on garage floor like oil stain with embedded fur tufts. Stood looking up at house, sad. Thought, why sad? Don't be sad. If sad, we'll make everyone sad. Went in happy, not mentioning bumper, squirrel mouse, smudge, maggots. Then gave Eva extra ice cream due to I had spoken harshly to her. She is sweetest kid, biggest heart. Once when little found dead bird in yard and placed on swing set slide so it could see him family. Cried when we threw out old rocking chair, claiming it had told her it wanted to live out rest of life in basement. Have to do better. Be kinder. Start now. Soon they will be grown, and how sad if only memory of you is testy, stressed guy in bad car. Must-do list. Balance checkbook. Get inspection sticker for Park Avenue. Replace bumper. Note to self, bumper replacement necessary for inspection sticker? Scrub squirrel mouse smudge so kids can do summer plays in garage. Should-do list. Clean basement. Recent rain caused mini-flood, which ruined boxes, shipping materials, stockpiled for Christmas. Also, guinea pig cage was like floating around. Move to top of washer. Now, when doing laundry, must move cage temporarily back into water. When will I have sufficient leisure, wealth to sit on hay bale, watching moonrise, while in luxurious mansion family sleeps? At that time, we'll have chance to reflect deeply on meaning of life, etc., etc. Have a feeling, and have always had a feeling, that this and other good things will happen for us. September 6th. Very depressing birthday party today at home of Lily's friend Leslie Torini. House's mansion where Lafayette once stayed. Torini showed us Lafayette's room, now their fun den. Plasma TV, pinball game, foot massager. 30 acres, 6 outbuildings, they call them outbuildings. One for Ferraris, 3. One for Porsches, 2, plus one he is rebuilding. One for historical merry-go-round they are restoring as family. Across Troutstock Stream, Red Oriental Bridge flown in from China. Showed us hoofmark from some dynasty. In front room near Steinway, plaster cast of hoofmark from even earlier dynasty, in wood of different bridge. Picasso autograph, Disney autograph, dress Greta Garbo once wore, all displayed in massive mahogany cabinet. Vegetable garden tended by a guy named Carl. Lily, wow, this garden is like 10 times bigger than our whole yard. Flower garden tended by separate guy, weirdly also named Carl. Lily, wouldn't you love to live here? Me, Lily, haha, don't, Pam, my wife, very sweet, love of life. What is she saying wrong? Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you love to live here? I know I would. In front of house, on sweeping lawn, largest SG arrangement ever seen, all in white, white smocks blowing in breeze. And Lily says, can we go closer? Leslie, her friend, we can, but we don't usually. Leslie's mother, dressed in Indonesian sarong. We don't, as we already have many times, dear, but you perhaps would like to? Perhaps this is all very new and exciting to you? Lily, shyly, it is, yes. Leslie's mom, please, go, enjoy. Lily races away. Leslie's mom, to Eva. And you, dear? Eva stands timidly against my leg, shakes head no. Just then father, Emmett, appears, holding freshly painted leg from merry-go-round horse, says time for dinner, hopes we like sailfish flown in fresh from Guatemala, prepared with a rare spice found only in one tiny region of Burma, which had to be bribed out, and also he had to design and build a special freshness-ensuring container for the sailfish. The kids can eat later in the treehouse, says Leslie's mom. We bought special table settings. The ones we previously had in the treehouse were Russian from when we lived there. Very nice, but sort of worn. Also, the candle holders were ancient. I am talking ancient as in Romanov ancient. And last week we finally got cable run up there, says Emmett. He indicates the treehouse, which is painted Victorian and has a gabled roof and a telescope sticking out in what looks like a small solar panel. Thomas, wow, that treehouse is like twice the size of our actual house. Pam, whispering, don't say like. Me, oh, let him say what he wants. Let's not be... Thomas, that treehouse is twice the size of our actual house. Thomas, as usual, exaggerating. Treehouse not twice size of our house. It's more like one-third size of our house. Still, yes, big treehouse. Our present not the very worst, although possibly least expensive. Someone brought a mini DVD player. Someone brought a lock of hair from an actual mummy. It was, in my opinion, the most heartfelt. Because Leslie, who appeared disappointed at the lock of mummy hair and said so because she already had one, was, it seemed to me, touched by the simplicity of our paper doll set. And although we did not view it as kitsch at the time we bought it, when Leslie's mom said, Les, check it out, kitsch or what, don't you love it? I thought, yes, well, maybe it is kitsch. Maybe we did intend. In any event, this eased the blow when the next present was a ticket to the Preakness, as Leslie has recently become interested in horses and has begun getting up early to feed their 9 horses, whereas previously she had categorically refused to feed the 6 llamas. Leslie's mom, so guess who ended up feeding the llamas? Leslie sharply, Mom, don't you remember back then I always had yoga? Leslie's mom, although actually, honestly, it was a blessing, a chance for me to rediscover what terrific animals they are after school on days on which Les had yoga. Leslie, like everyday yoga? Leslie's mom, I guess you just have to trust your kids, trust that their innate interest in life will win out in the end, don't you think? Which is what is happening now with Les and horses. God, she loves them. Leslie, they're wonderful. Pam, our kids, we can't even get them to pick up what Ferber does in the front yard. Leslie's mom, and Ferber is... me, dog. Leslie's mom, ha ha, yes, well, everything poops, isn't that just it? Though it's true, we cannot keep yard picked up, even with recent attempt at schedule. Did not like Pam sharing this with world, as if our kids, in addition to less nicely dressed than Leslie, also less responsible. As if dog not perfectly good pet, relative to llama, horse, parrot. Parrot in upstairs hall says, bon nuit, as I pass the pee, etc., etc. After dinner, strolled grounds with Emmett, who is surgeon, does something 2 days a week with brain inserts, all electronic devices, possibly biotronic. They're very small. Hundreds can fit on head of pin or dime. Did not totally follow. Asked about my work, I told. He said, well, huh, amazing the strange arcane things our culture requires some of us to do. Degrading things, things that offer no tangible benefit to anyone. How do they expect people to continue to even hold their heads up? Could not think of response. Note to self, think up response. Send on card. Thus striking up friendship with Emmett. Returned to house, sat on special star-watching platform as stars came out. Our kids sat watching stars fascinated, as if no stars in our neighborhood. What, I said no stars in our neighborhood? No response. From anyone. Actually, stars there did seem brighter. On star platform, had too much to drink, and suddenly everything I thought of seemed stupid. So just went quiet, like in stupor. Pam drove home. I sat sullen and drunk in passenger seat of Park Avenue. Kids babbling about what a great party it was, Lily especially. Thomas spouting all these boring llama facts per Emmett. Lily, I can't wait till my party. My party is 2 weeks, right? Pam, what do you want to do for your party, sweetie? Long silence in car. Lily, finally, sadly. Oh, I don't know. Nothing, I guess. Pulled up to house. Another silence as we regarded blank empty yard. That is, mostly crabgrass and no red oriental bridge with ancient hoofprints and no outbuildings and not a single SG, but only Ferber, who we'd kind of forgotten about, and who, as usual, had circled round and round the tree until nearly choking to death on his gradually shortening leash, having basically tethered himself to the ground in supine position, and was looking up at us with begging eyes in which Desperation was combined with a sort of low, boiling anger. Let him off leash. He shot me hostile look, took dump extremely close to porch. Watched to see if kids would take initiative and pick up. But no. Kids only slumped past and stood exhausted by front door. Then I knew I should take initiative and pick up, but was tired and knew I had to come in and write in his stupid book. Do not really like rich people, as they make us poor people feel dopey and inadequate. Not that we are poor. I would say we are middle. We are very, very lucky, I know that. But still, it is not right that rich people make us middle people feel dopey and inadequate. I'm writing this still drunk, and it is getting late, and tomorrow is Monday, which means work. Work, work, work. Stupid work. I'm so tired of work. Good night. September 7th. Just reread that last entry and should clarify. I'm not tired of work. It is a privilege to work. I do not hate the rich. I aspire to be rich myself. And when we finally do get our own bridge, trout, treehouse, SGs, etc., at least we'll know we really earned them. Unlike, say, the Torinis, who I feel must have family money. Today at work, at lunch, was fall fling. Down we all went, perhaps 1,000 folks streaming out. Little trio playing. Someone had distributed orange and yellow mini flags stamped FF, which soon nearly covered ground. Fake river runs through courtyard. Many assholes had dropped their mini flags into fake river. Filtering device at one end soon clogged with mini flags. Maintenance man with several mini flags sticking out of rear pocket, crossly going around attempting to dislodge mini flags from filter with yardstick. As always, they served these flat little dry sandwiches. By time our group got down, many sandwiches already on ground around serving table with heel marks. Threw ourselves down on berm, ate hurriedly. Sat thinking of Eva, such a sweetie. Last night after party, found her sad in her room. Asked why. She said no reason. But in sketchpad, crayon pic of row of sad SGs. Could tell we're meant to be sad due to frowns went down off faces like Fu Manchus and tears were dropping in arcs, flowers springing up where tears hit ground. Note to self, talk to her. Explain it does not hurt. They are not sad, but actually happy. Given what their prior conditions were like, they chose, are glad, etc. Very moving piece on NPR, are a Bangladeshi SG sending money home, hence her parents able to build small shack. Note to self, find online, download, play for Eva. First, fix computer. Computer super slow. Due to low memory? Possibly delete Circus Loser? Acrobats run all jerky due to low memory plus elephants do not hop equals no fun. Soon was nearly one, we returned to work. In elevator, some still holding our little dry sandwiches, stood all of us red-faced men in ties, making jokes about enough fall flinging, the fall fling has been flung, etc., etc. Then the embarrassed silence as we, in our minds, re-said the things we had just enthusiastically, heatedly said, as if vying for some sort of stupid utterance prize. Then brief period during which we each surreptitiously cut eyes up at mirrored ceiling of elevator to check bald spots, etc., etc., see what we looked like from above. Anders said, I must appear pretty weird to birds. No one laughed. All just made that sound that is like laugh placeholder so Anders wouldn't feel bad, as his mother has recently passed away. September 8th. Just now returned from long walk in Woodcliff. All over up there, men my age reading in big chairs under orange affluent lights. Where is my big chair? Orange light. No big chair, no affluent lights, no book-lined room. Why is art on our walls so lame? We have only one of old-time cars got at Target and one of generic beach with Ferris wheel from garage sale. What are we doing wrong here? Where are expensive framed original art signed by artist? Note to self, befriend young artist? Young artist comes to house? Is so impressed with family, paints portrait of family gratis? Still, expensive to frame. Maybe artist so impressed with family, frames it himself, i.e., frame equals part of gift? In Woodcliff, everything lavish. beautiful flower beds, nighttime smell of cedar mulch, speedboats on lawns in moonlight. Behind big turreted house on corner of Longfellow and Purdy Way, yard slopes down to 200 yards of perfect grass. There in the dark, 15, I counted, SGs, hanging silently, white smocks in moonlight. Breathtaking. Wind picks up, they go off at slight angle. Smocks and hair, long flowing black, assuming same angle. Incredible flowers, tulips, roses, something bright orange, long stalky things of white clusters, shaking in wind with paper on paper sound. From inside, flute music. Makes one think of ancient times and affluent men of those times building great gardens, roaming through while holding forth on philosophy, bounty of earth having been lassoed for the pleasure of etc., etc. Wind stops, everything returns to vertical. From across lawn, soft sighing, smattering of mumbled foreign phrases, perhaps saying goodnight, perhaps saying in own lingo, gosh, that was some strong wind. Almost went down for a closer look, possible conversation, but at last minute caught myself, thought, wait, no, trespassing, bad idea. Stood a while watching, thinking, praying, Lord, give us more. Give us enough. Help us not fall behind peers. Help us not, that is, fall further behind peers. For kids' sake. Do not want them scarred by how far behind we are. That is all I ask. Dog started barking, dashed out between two SGs, one of whom let out little shriek. But dog on lead. Snap back. From house. Calm down, Brownie. Brownie, mellow. Heard this from tree shadow, hurried away. September 12th. 9 days till Lily's birthday. Kind of dread this. Too much pressure. Do not want to have bad party. Why issue? Possibly own 13th birthday party? Horseback riding and Ken Drzyniak nearly paralyzed in fall? Plus cake was stale. Snake menaced Kate Fruslin. Dad killed snake with hoe. Bits of snake flew up, soiling Kate's dress. Or maybe this birthday stress perfectly normal, all parents feel. Had asked Lily for a list of birthday gift ideas. Today came home to envelope labeled possible gift list. Inside, clippings from some catalog. Resting fierceness. A pair of fierce porcelain jungle cats are tamed, at least for now, on highly detailed ornamental pillows, but their wildness is not to be underestimated. Left-facing cheetah, $350. Right-facing tiger, $325. Then on post-it, Dad, second choice. Girl reading to little sister figurine. This childhood study by Nevada artist Danny will recall in porcelain the joys of story time and the tender moments shared by all. Girl and little girl reading on polished rock, $280. Discouraging, I felt. Because one, why does young girl of 12 want such old lady gift? And two, where does girl of 12 get idea that $300 equals appropriate amount for birthday gift? For us, it was one shirt we didn't want, usually homemade. Once got basketball, but was overly bouncy ABA type, red, white, and blue, with, for some reason, drawing of clown on it. When bounced, went like 2 feet higher than normal ball. Friends called it my bouncy ball. Needless to say, did not cost $300. Believe mom got with soap coupons. Gave to me wrapped in homemade shirt with one long arm hanging down. Then urged me to don long arm shirt, go out, show guys. Took photo of me trying to dribble bouncy ball as friend Al held out long arm of shirt, as if to say, wow, what long arm. In photo, ball bouncing up out of frame. Bottom curve of ball just visible, like moon. Chris M. looking up at ball, moon, amazed, flinching. However, do not want to break Lily's heart or harshly remind her of our limitations. God knows she's already often enough harshly reminded of our limitations. For My Yard project at school, Leslie Torini brought in pics of Oriental Bridge, plus background info on SGs, place of origin, age, etc., as did, quote, every other kid in class. whereas Lily brought in 1940s condom box found last year during aborted attempt to start vegetable garden. Perhaps was bad call Ari letting her bring condom box? I thought being historical would be good, plus perhaps many would not notice it was condom box. But teacher noticed, pointed out. Kids had big hoot. Teacher used opportunity to discuss safe sex, which was good for class, but maybe not so good for Lily. As for party, Lily said she would rather not have one. I asked, why not, sweetie? She said, oh, no reason. I said, is it because of our yard, our house? Is it because you're afraid that, given our small house and bare yard, party might be boring or embarrassing? At which she burst into tears and said, oh, Daddy. Actually, one figurine might not be excessive. Or rather, might be excess worth indulging in. Due to sad look on her face when she came in on my yard day and dropped condom box on table with sigh. Maybe girl reading to little sister, as that is cheapest. Although, maybe giving cheapest sends bad signal. Signals frugality even in midst of attempt to be generous. Maybe best to go big. Go for resting fierceness. Put Cheetah on Visa, hope she's happily surprised. September 14th. Observed Mel Redden today. He did fine. I did fine. He committed minor errors. I caught them all. He made one recycling error, threw tab can in wrong bucket. When throwing tab in wrong bucket, made ergonomic error by throwing from far away, missing, having to get up and rethrow. Then made second ergonomic error, did not squat when picking up tab to rethrow, but bent at waist, thereby increasing risk of back injury. Mel signed off on my observations and asked me to reobserve. Very smart. Then made no errors. Threw no cans in bucket. Made no ergonomic errors, but just sat very still at desk. So was able to append that to his record. Parted friends, etc., etc. 1 week until Lily's birthday. Note to self. Order Cheetah. However, not that simple. Some recent problems with Visa. Full. Past full. Found out at Your Italian Kitchen when Visa refused. Left Pam and kids there, walked rapidly out with a big fake smile, drove to ATM. Then scary moment as ATM declined. Nearby Wino said ATM broken, directed me to different ATM. Thanked Wino with friendly wave as I drove past. Wino gave me finger. Second ATM, thank God, not broken, did not decline. Arrived winded back at Your Italian Kitchen to find Pam on third cup of coffee and kids falling off chairs and tapping aquarium with dimes, waitstaff looking peeved. Paid cash with big apologetic tip. Considered collecting dimes from kids. Still, overall nice night, really fun. Kids showed good manners, until aquarium bit. But problem remains, Visa full. Also Amex full, and Discover nearly full. Call Discover, $200 available. If we transfer $200 from checking, once paycheck comes in, would then have $400 available on Discover, could get Cheetah. Although timing problematic. Currently checking at zero. Paycheck must come, must put paycheck in checking pronto, hope paycheck clears quickly. And then when doing bills, pick bills totaling $200 to not pay, to defer paying. Stretched a bit thin these days. Note to future generations, in our time are such things as credit cards. Company loans money, you pay back at high interest rate. It's nice for when you do not actually have money to do thing you want to do, for example, buy extravagant Cheetah. You may say, safe in your future time, wouldn't it be better to simply not do thing you can't afford to do? Easy for you to say, you are not here in our world with kids, kids you love, while other people are doing good things for their kids, such as a heritage journey to Nice, if you are the Mancinis, or 3 weeks wreck diving off the Bahamas if you are Gary Gold and his tan, sleek son, Byron. Limitation is so frustrating. There's so much I want to do and experience and give to kids. Time going by so quickly, kids growing up so fast. If not now, when? When will we give them largesse and sense of generosity? Never been to Hawaii or parasailed or eaten lunch at Cafe by Ocean, wearing floppy straw hats just purchased on whim. So I worry, Growing up in paucity, won't they become too cautious? Not that they are growing up in paucity. Still, there are things we want but cannot have. If kids raise too cautious due to paucity, will not world chew them up and spit out? Would like to buy large box, decorate like buried treasure, bury, make map, hide map, lead them to map without appearing to. Then, when they bring map, say, ridiculous, don't be big dreamers, be cautious, be frugal, world is cruel. And when they persist and actually find treasure, won't that be an excellent lesson in sticking to it? But how to do? Where to get such a box? What to put in box that doesn't cost too much? How to dig such a big hole and when? Always busy on weekends. If had more money, could hire maid, hire garden guy, freeing me up to find box, fill box, bury box. Or have garden guy bury box after I fill. Or have maid fill. But do not have money for garden guy or maid, or money for treasure box, or treasure to put in it. And in fact, do not even have money to buy kit to make map appear ancient. Still, must fight good fight. Think of Dad. When Mom left Dad, Dad kept going to job. When laid off from job, got paper route. When laid off paper route, got lesser paper route. In time, got better route back. By time Dad died, had job almost as good as original job he had lost, and had paid off most debt incurred after demotion to lesser route. Note to self, visit Dad's grave. Bring flowers. Have talk with Dad RE, certain things said by me at time of paper routes, due to could not afford rental tux for prom, but had to wear Dad's old tux, which did not fit. Still, no need to be rude. Was not Dad's fault he was good foot taller than me and, therefore, pant legs dragged, hiding Dad's borrowed shoes, which pinched because Dad, though tall, had tiny feet. Dad, good guy. Always worked hard for us and never left us and always brought home candy, even back in sad early days of lesser route. September 15th. Damn it. Plan will not work. Cannot get check to discover on time. Needs time to clear. So no cheetah. Must think of something else to get Lily so we can give to her at small family-only party in kitchen. Or may have to do what Mom sometimes did, which was, when thing not available, wrap picture of thing with note promising thing. However, note to self, do not do other thing Mom did, which was, when child tries to redeem, roll eyes, act exasperated, ask child if child thinks money grows on trees. No. When Lily comes to me with coupon, surprise with generosity by taking her to glamorous lunch at best place in town, all dressed up. Owner comes over and says, with French accent, oh, I see it is someone's special day. And Lily blushes, note to self, learn French phrase meaning, yes, yes, it is her birthday. After which we go shopping for figurines, and to surprise her, I buy her not just one, but two figurines, and better, more expensive ones than cheap crap in catalog. Note to self, find ad with pick of cheetah for IOU coupon. Was on little desk, but have not seen. Possibly used to record phone message on. Possibly used to pick up little thing cat spit out. Note to self, find out what is best restaurant in town. Poor Lily. Her sweet hopeful face when tiny, wearing Burger King crown, and now this. She did not know was destined to be not princess, but poor girl. Poorish girl. Girl not the richest. No party, no present. Possibly no pick of cheetah in IOU. Could draw cheetah, but might then think she was getting camel. Or not getting camel, rather. Am not best drawer. Ha ha, must keep spirits up. Laughter best medicine, etc., etc. Someday, I'm sure, dreams will come true. But when? Why not now? Why not? I've had such a headache for 3 straight days. September 20th. Sorry for silence, but wow. Was too happy busy to write. Friday, most incredible day ever. Do not need to even write down, as we'll never forget this awesome day. But will record for future generations. Nice for them to know good luck and happiness real and possible. in America of my time want them to know anything possible. Weird to look at previous entry and see phrase, why not now? Because exactly, that is exactly what happened. Wow, wow, wow is all I can say. Remember how above always buy a lunchtime scratch-off ticket? Have I said? Maybe did not say? Well, Friday won 10 grand. Every Friday, to reward self for good week, stop at store near home, treat self to Butterfinger plus scratch-off ticket. Sometimes if hard week, 2 Butterfingers. Sometimes if very hard week, 3 Butterfingers. But if 3 Butterfingers, no scratch-off. But Friday won 10 grand on scratch-off. Drop both Butterfingers, stood there holding dime used to scratch, mouth hanging open, kind of reeled into magazine rack. Guy took ticket, read ticket, said, winner. Guy came out, righted magazine rack, shook my hand. Then said we would get check for 10 grand within week. Raced home on foot, forgetting car. Raced back for car. Halfway back, thought, what the heck? Raced home on foot. Pam raced out, said, where's car? Showed her scratch-off ticket. She stood stunned in yard. Are we rich now? Thomas said, racing out, dragging Ferber by collar. Not rich, Pam said. Richer, I said. Richer, Pam said. Damn. Then we all danced around yard, Ferber looking witless at sudden dancing, then doing dance of own by chasing own tail. Then, of course, had to decide how to use. That night in bed, Pam said, partially pay off credit cards? My feeling was, yes, okay, could. But did not seem to me exciting, and also did not seem all that exciting to her. Pam, it would be nice to do something special for Lily's birthday. Me.